FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. Like I said, we're back from the North American Bitcoin Conference in Chile, Miami, Florida. Lots going on with the market. Market keeps going higher. Government shutdown. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe we should shut the government down more and get a higher stock market as a result. You know, that's always a possibility. Hey, first, as always, we love when you participate in the show. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Also, get a free white paper on cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. So David Scranton is with us. David, you've been on the show a number of times, and you're a pretty savvy investor. And welcome back first.
Thank you.
Hey, the market just keeps rolling along. Are we going to see double-digit returns for 2018?
Well, first of all, thank you for not asking me about Bitcoin, because if you went to the conference, then you know a heck of a lot more about Bitcoin than I did, so I appreciate that.
I call them kleptocurrencies. So
you know, I like that.
If you're not
like
careful, there's a lot of kleptos out there.
Oh, I know. Well, and you know, it's funny because the markets are starting to get seemingly almost irrational, as Bitcoin had been for, you know, a long, long time, and Bitcoin might return to. It's funny, actually, you say, do I think we're going to have a double-digit market this year? Because my market prediction for 2018 was just that we would have a double-digit return in 2018. But I'm not going to say which direction those double digits are going to be in. See, that's the catch. because when you have a market like this, momentum can carry you a lot longer than people think, and the momentum now is strong. But if the carpet gets pulled out from under that momentum in 2018, the slide could be fast and furious on the other side. So it's kind of a bookends prediction on my part for 2018 because of that.
Yeah, well, you know what the wise economist once said, David, the future is always uncertain. You don't know what's going to happen. So many issues going on with the budget, with Congress, with just the economy as a whole. But I'll tell you what, when we first started talking a little bit more than a year ago, the economy didn't look nearly as strong as it does today, did it?
No, the economy does look stronger, absolutely. Carrie, it's interesting because the corporate taxes have caused these corporate profits to go up. How much? Well, most people say maybe 10 to 15%. So yeah, if the Dow's up 35% or so since the election, and 10 to 15 of it is from the tax breaks that corporations are getting, then the question is, has the economy really risen enough, got enough stronger to justify another 20% market gain? And I don't think so. You know, I'm glad that GDP is finally back to 3%. At least for a couple of quarters running. That's good. But I think a lot of that is just optimism. A lot of that short term. I think a lot of that's because of the tax break. I don't see that continuing. And I certainly don't see it getting to 4%. So that makes me nervous that even if the market is adequately valued at this particular point, will the market stop going up right now? Not with this momentum. It's likely got some more upside before it turns around.
So, yeah, well, you know, a trend in motion stays in motion until it stops, right?
Kinetic energy, absolutely.
And absolutely. And then we've also got the issue of where else are you going to put your money for any kind of return? And, you know, I don't like to jump on optimism bandwagons because it's dangerous. And usually when the whole world is thinking one thing, the opposite's going to occur. But the bullish case for the tax reform, look, not so much tax reform for you and I, David, you know that. But for Joe Sixpack, who's, you know, going to get $5,000-$7,000 a year more from the tax cut and from the bonuses and pay increases that corporate America is putting into place, this is a pretty big deal, isn't it? It's the first pro-government act towards the middle class going back over a decade.
Yeah, and the 25% bracket that a lot of people are in, you know, has really changed to 22 and 24. So that's on average a 2% cut. The 15% bracket is, you know, 10 and 12. So that's a cut also. That's all great news. And But realize that while the standard deduction went up, the personal exemptions also went away. So really on that side, they haven't gained very much. And I wouldn't say that this is maybe the person you're describing, but pretty close. You know, having a $10,000 limit on property taxes and state income taxes. You know, there are a lot of states where if a family's making $100,000, you know, they're paying $7,000 in income tax and they might have a $5,000 property tax bill. Well, now they're giving up $2,000 of that deduction. So I think it's going to help a little. I don't think it's going to help to the extent that everyone would like. I think the biggest benefit is really helping increase corporate profits. But again, that's a one-time event. Then the meter resets based upon the new baseline and we start all over again. And that's where we are right now, seemingly, with the financial markets and the economy. And I'll tell you, being in the saddle and talking to clients on a regular basis, what I do see now is kind of interesting. You know, we do a lot of fixed income, as you know, bonds and bond-like instruments. And for the first time, really, this month, I'm now starting to see clients call up and say, you know, why are we underperforming the S&P by so much? Now, they know we're not in the stock market with the majority of their money, but they're starting to want emotionally to jump on that bandwagon.
Getting greedy. They're getting greedy.
It tells me we could be getting to the beginning of the end, because you know how it is. When the last guy is ready to jump on, that's usually when the fall is ready to begin. But again, if they're just starting to talk like that, you know, we could have another year of strong growth just on emotion, just on momentum. But only if somebody's smart enough and emotionally tough enough to then liquidate and get out before the drop gives back all those gains.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. Paper profits aren't real until you sell. Well, I'm going to make a prediction, David, and it's going to happen after the midterm elections, and that there's going to be another round of tax cuts. And this time, I believe it will go more towards the wage earner than towards corporations. I think they will redo the whole LLC pass-through thing, because I think this tax cut is going to be a lot more expensive than anybody is anticipating, because the accountants and lawyers have got their pencils out trying to figure out how to game it. And look, there'll be people switching back to C-Corps to get the 21% tax rate there. I think a lot of things are going to happen, but I do predict there will be another round of tax cuts. I don't know how they'll do it in the face of the deficit, but you know, where there's a will, there's a lawyer.
Well, and you're in good company with that prediction. I had Steve Forbes as a guest on my TV show right before the holidays, and he said the exact same thing. I had him on, you know, literally the weekend right after the tax law went through, and he said he thinks this is just the first, that he, you know, President Trump needed to do something to get it through, but there's going to be a much bigger agenda. In fact, he said there might even be two more sets of tax cuts in his term as president. So,
agreed.
Now I've got two of you telling me the same thing. I might almost believe it.
Yeah, well, if Steve Forbes said it, I think you can trust his opinion more than me. As long as he's not running for president, then all bets are off, because he's just unelectable for some reason that I'll never understand. But and it's like the whole government shutdown, the faux government shutdown, set the stage for it. That the Democrats will be as helpless to stop Trump's agenda as the Republicans were to stop Obama's agenda. And that's the fascinating thing. And then we find out, well, how big an impact does that have upon the economy? How much money does it mean to you, the individual? I think one thing you can't deny about the tax cut, David, is it's very pro-entrepreneur. I think a lot of people will start businesses who might otherwise not have done. Also, because it's anti-wage earner, and you talk about the person making $100,000 and paying $12,000, $15,000 in state and local taxes. What about the lawyer in New York who's making $500,000 in New York City, $500,000 living paycheck to paycheck, and kids go to private schools. He's in a $1 million condo, which isn't even that big a deal in New York City, let's face it. This guy is really getting it, and it makes sense for him to branch out, go off on his own, set up an LLC where he can get back some of that money that would otherwise go to Uncle Sam.
Yeah, and he's going to get hit really hard because, you know, between all the state and local income taxes, the real estate tax is a huge chunk that he will not be able to deduct anymore. And that's a big issue. You know, I'm down here in Florida. We don't have an income tax, but, you know, they make up for it in property tax. So just alone, I'm looking at how much property tax that I won't be able to deduct now as a result of it. And even thought about, you know, do I really want to keep this house? Should I downsize? Should I buy a nice condominium? So I probably won't do it, but it's even crossed my mind. So I'm already thinking about decisions based upon that. And that's what people are going to do. They're going to make adjustments. So it's like whack-a-mole. You know, whenever you change one thing, it affects something that you can't predict. The interesting thing to see here is, you know, when, you know, now that the one fuzzy head has been whacked, now which one's going to pop up in a different area? And only time will really tell.
Well, one thing I do believe will happen is it will be a boom to people renting. It'll be a boom to landlords, I should say, because I think a lot of you out there are going to say, you know, the kids are getting older. I'm not going to need this house. And I can't deduct the real estate taxes now. Or, you know, in Westchester County in New York, 74% of the population pays more than $10,000 a year in property taxes. In Nassau County, there's 264,000, I think, not exact on the number, 264,000 families paying more than 10,000 per year. So it's going to make sense for people in certain positions just to become renters or to not become a homeowner at all, because you know that your tax burden is going to go up and you're not going to be able to write it off.
Yeah. And now what's affected some of the, as you start to get a little higher in terms of the price of homes, or like you said, in places like New York City, the effect it could have is even the mortgage interest deductibility going from $1 million down to $750. You know, that could affect somebody if you're buying a property for $1.5 million and taking a mortgage. You know, do I really want to make this purchase now? If I can't write it off, well, maybe I'll just go rent because I can't write off my rent either. So, and what's interesting is the property owners can still take those write-offs. The property owner can still deduct all of his or her interest if he's renting it out, and as well as property tax and everything else, because now it's
income.
It's against rental property.
Right.
So I think you're right. I think one of the places the whack-a-mole shows up that we haven't considered is more and more rental properties becoming popular and fewer people owning, which was already happening anyways with the millennials because they weren't as anxious to become homeowners as the rest of us were in years past.
Hey, let's not forget that 10,000, to my knowledge, the 10,000 state and local tax deduction is not indexed to inflation. So your taxes, even here in Florida, I think the Save Our Homes Act or something like that, 2-3% you're capped. But 2-3% over 10 years, you're going to be paying 30% more. And forget it if you buy a new house or if you move and it comes off and it gets reassessed. So the point being here that really renting will be the place to be, and you'll own when you want to rent it out to somebody else if you're in that position. I think it'll be a boom for rental housing.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing is how much of an effect will it really have on the high tax states? How much of an effect will it have on the Californias and the New Yorks and the Connecticuts and the New Jerseys? You know, whether people, you know, it's interesting. People typically often will stay in those states because family is there. And they say, well, you know, the grandchildren are here, so we're retiring, but we're going to stay here and we're going to deal with the taxes no matter what. But now by getting rid of the deductibility of those taxes on a federal return for some, specifically for the people who have the ways and means to buy another property, are some of them going to say, you know what, forget it. I'm going to come to a place like Florida or New Hampshire that doesn't have an income tax. I'll buy my main property there and I'll just buy a smaller place here and I'll give up my residency and I won't pay all the income tax to the state and I'll pay a lot less property tax. What does that do to these states? Are we going to see more bankruptcies by states and municipalities? You know, I was concerned about this before the tax law, that right now I believe that a lot of the rating agencies are just like they were rating the mortgage bonds irrationally 10 years ago, giving AAA ratings to mortgage bonds that really didn't deserve AAA. I think that's happening right now with a lot of municipalities. So I was concerned about municipal failures before the tax law changed. Now it even concerns me more. I'd like to even hear your thoughts on that. What do you think?
Oh, I totally see this. Look, Connecticut, New Jersey, California, to a lesser extent, New York, certainly downstate New York, upstate won't even talk about that, have already been hitting the skids, and they can't tax enough to pay the outrageous pensions, the outrageous union wages and contracts that they've put the taxpayers in hock for. Look, you look at Florida, look at New York, same population. What's the difference? Florida has right to work and no income tax and no unions, basically, with minor exceptions that we don't really need to get into. There's legal reasons why some employees are unionized. When you compare that to New York, Florida's budget is half of New York State's. And the real estate taxes are still cheaper. The sales tax is less than New York's. And it's number three in population now, Florida, as opposed to New York, number four. You know, it's going to be, well, the last person who leaves, please turn out the lights. They've got to get to the point where they can trash these unions and bring down the cost of doing government. And all the laws right now in New York are against that. But once bankruptcy can do interesting things to people, you can, and entities, you can wind up cutting costs that you never thought you could cut before. You know, the, as Lee Iacocca called it, the luxury of adversity. And they're about to get more adversity than they know what to do with here, David. That's my belief.
So in some ways, it sounds like you're almost saying it's a little bit of a red state versus blue state issue, huh? I mean, and I can't necessarily argue with that because of some of these things that do increase the expenditures. Although I hate to think of it that way, because if you do, then you think, gosh, is this a problem that we can ever solve?
Well, it's every problem is solved either with the work of the participants or with outsiders who are forced to take over. The problem gets solved. The solutions might not be desirable, but the problem will have to be solved because the stakes are just too high not to solve it. And Illinois, look, Illinois is the furthest down the tubes of any state, but you look at every state virtually in the country, it's over-indebted, poorly run, and too much government and wasteful spending, right, et cetera. So this is a wake-up call. But I understand, you know, having lived in a blue state, now living in Florida, hey, I'm not, why should I have to subsidize their high taxes by having to pay more federal income tax because they're paying less because they get to deduct their outrageous state and local taxes? Hey, this is a big deal, but it's not the only deal. Let's look at the fact that you can buy equipment and write it off that year without having to depreciate. You still depreciate if you're a publicly traded company. You have the depreciation on the books and you'll depreciate it for profits over time, you know, for public, for your financial statements. You'll still be depreciating.
For your GAAP accounting.
Yeah, for your GAAP. But in terms of your tax accounting, what goes on your 1065 tax return, the corporate tax return, you could just write it off in that year. And even if you're financing it, I believe, I don't think there's an at-risk requirement there. You just write it off that year and you pay no taxes. The government has no idea how much they're going to lose as a result of that, David.
Yeah, what's interesting about that, though, is, you know, you might recall in 2010, 2011, President Obama had done something similar to that. And a lot of companies really never took advantage of it. And maybe back then, because we were still recovering from the financial crisis and they didn't have the means. But it'd be interesting to see now if more companies actually do take advantage of that and purchase more capital equipment, investing it back in the economy, in essence, because taking the write-off up front really gives them, you know, even at 21%, it gives them a 21% discount in the price. And, you know, a lot of people, if something were on sale for 21%, that might be just enough motivation to push them over the edge. So it'd be interesting to see if it's different this time.
I think it will be because the optimism level is much higher. We had just come off of the financial crisis, right? And really, the companies were hoarding cash, and they've been hoarding cash for 8 years now. And now, for the first time, it looks like they're getting ready to spend some of it. You know, I don't know what's going to happen with it, but I think it will be more effective than it was in the past.
Yeah, and I think what people don't realize is that even corporations make emotional decisions to some extent. They're held in check by the boards and all that. But the reality is, though, that if they've got to make a decision to spend or not to spend, they have to feel confident. They have to feel confident that that expenditure, that investment will pay off. And that's an emotional thing that you can't necessarily quantify. And I think that they're feeling confident now that things are going in the direction of growth, And oh, by the way, gosh, you get this 21% off sale. Okay, fine. We'll make the investment now. Whereas maybe a year ago, we weren't quite that confident. So just like right now, you know, people are overly confident about the markets and doing something that, whether it's rational or not, they're doing it and buying securities. Only time will tell whether or not it is. You know, companies do that also to a certain degree.
Yeah, and
if the president can use that to his advantage and get our GDP to 4%, which I'm skeptical of, but I'd hope and pray that he can do it.
Yeah, well, one other thing, for the pass-throughs, where their effective tax rate is 29.6, for them, it's an even bigger discount. They're saving 30%. And small businesses, most of them are pass-throughs at this point in time. 4%, I don't know. I think if the stock market keeps going up, or at least maybe trade sideways for a while, I think the optimism level, it's perhaps doable. But hey, my crystal ball is probably as accurate as yours is, David.
And we talk frequently enough where we'll be able to tweak our views as we talk more and more, because it's going to be interesting. I am looking forward economically to the year 2018, more so than I have in any of the years of the last decade. So it'll be interesting.
Hey, it's like the whole attitude, sense of the country, of the producers. Forget about the makers. Forget about the takers. You know, the takers are the takers, but the makers seem to be back on top. And I think that's the biggest point here, is that if you're a producer, whatever you're producing, you don't feel like the government is out to just to, you know, rip you a new one and take everything that you've made. And that's pro-entrepreneurship, which is what the country is built upon. And on that point, David, we will leave it. Just tell us where the best place to find you is.
Well, I always send people to my book website, my book, returnonprincipal.com. Return on Principle ends in P-L-E. All the hate emails I get saying I can't even spell. No, we spelled it that way on purpose. Principle ending on P-L-E. Returnonprincipal.com is a great place to start.
Good place to start, returnonprincipal.com. Hey, send us an email. Be part of the show, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. David, we'll talk to you in another month or so and see how it starts working out.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.